Last week I gave a message titled, Is This Your Canary? The sermon was based on the idea that in the old days, a canary was placed in a mine shaft, and if the canary died, there was a warning that the carbon monoxide in the mine shaft was getting too high, and the miners needed to scurry out of the mine shaft fairly quickly. In my sermon, the canary was a metaphor for those conditions occurring in our nation today, warning our people, those who watch this on the internet, warning those people who live in large cities that this, what's happening, is kind of like a canary, warning them that they need to get out of these congested areas and find a place of refuge in rural America. One of the things was the coronavirus, all the lockdowns. In some areas, they are still suffering some lockdowns. However, with the riots recently, a lot of things have been released because there's no focus on it by the media. Anyway, the lockdowns forced a lot of people to be confined to their homes. And as you well know, because you've seen the news also, people were being arrested for doing nothing more than walking on a beach or getting their a boat or sunbathing. And or having a family get-together where more than 10 people there are being harassed. And then the riots that have been going on for the last 10 days is another sign that the canary is dying, that the canary is dying. We have people across the nation who watch our church program on the internet. They watch it on YouTube. And they watch our sermons each week. But this week, I'm primarily going to focus on those within Harrison and Boone County. Although what I say will be applicable to people nationwide, of course, is primarily focused on the people in Harrison and Boone County, because we suppose that with the ad that we had in Sunday or Saturday's paper, that there will be a certain number of people who will go to that website, and we have an announcement on there right now saying, watch this morning's sermon when it's uploaded on Monday, because we'll be dealing with the recent protests in Harrison. So there will be a number of people who will watch that because of that. And so this message this morning is primarily focused upon them. I'm done my best to keep it confined to a reasonable amount of time, because as you know, with subjects like this, it could become very lengthy, and with the hot days is, we don't want people fainting in the aisles, although we have a rescue team here to help them. I believe from the Zinc Fire Department is here to help rescue anybody who should faint in the aisles. I'd like to begin this message by referencing 2 Chronicles 15:5. 2 Chronicles 15:5. In their times of rebellion against God, there was no peace. Problems troubled the nation on every hand. And that's the reason for my title of my message, Troubled Nation. Problems troubled the nation on every hand. Crime was on the increase everywhere. There was external wars, internal fighting of cities and cities, for God was plaguing them with all sorts of trouble. I don't think there's anyone who can deny that, or at least seriously deny, that we live in a troubled nation today. I find it hard to believe that anybody cannot acknowledge that as a fact. For whatever reason, no matter how they may view their political position, whether it be right or left, it seems to be everybody is aware that we live in a troubled nation. And this passage clearly tells us that problems trouble the nation on every hand. And it's true. On every hand in America today, wherever we look, it seems that there is trouble facing our nation. And we are clearly told these troubles come about. They come when there is a rebellion against God. And that's what we feel is happening today. There is a rebellion against God, And that in itself would make quite a lengthy and interesting sermon. But all I want to say right now, the rebellion against God is not what most churches would probably recognize. I know most churches will tell you that we have got to get back to God. But I'm here to say that most churches do not understand what this rebellion against God really is. We're not going to go into that today. But there is a rebellion. Everybody has to agree with that. Last week I highlighted a passage from Isaiah, and I'd like to do it again, call your attention to it again. Speaking about this rebellion and what it says. In Isaiah chapter 1, heaven and earth, I raised my children, helped them to grow, but they have returned against me and know not its master. And a donkey knows where its owner feeds it. But the people of Israel do not know me. My people do not understand how terrible Israel is, a nation of sin. A people loaded down with guilt and a group of children doing evil. Children are full of evil. They have left the Lord, they hate God, the Holy One of Israel, and they have turned away from Him as if He were a stranger. Why should He continue to be punished? Why do you continue to turn against Him? Your whole head is sick and your heart is faint. There's no healthy spot from the bottom of your foot to the top of your head. Referring to our nation, these metaphors for our nation. You are covered with wounds and hurts and sores and are not cleansed and covered, and no medicine takes away the pain. Your land is ruined, your cities have been burned with fire. While you watch, your enemies are stealing everything from your land. It is ruined like a country destroyed by its enemies. And of course, thievery among our nation is not just talking about the looting we see in the streets, but we know even our national industry has been stolen and shipped to foreign lands. God is talking, in this passage, God is talking to America. Now, I'm aware that this was given long before America as a nation was formed. This event here was approximately 760 B.C. But it's the principle we're looking at. The principle of when you rebel against God, you'll suffer the consequences. That's the principle we're looking at. And it's true for any day and any age. Now, as children, we understand, or we're taught, or we should understand, and parents try to teach your children, that there are consequences for our actions. When we do something, there's going to be consequences. A good parent wanted to help their children to understand that. And most people, we hopefully will learn that. And mostly we understand there's consequences for our actions. And the churches tell us continually, the wages of sin is death. Consequences for your actions. We all know that. But we're just not talking about you as an individual. There are consequences for the actions of the nation. The nation will suffer the consequences of a sin. Not just individuals, not just people, but the nation itself will suffer consequences for the sin of the nation. In Psalms 9:17, it says that when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. And when wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. That's Proverbs 29:2. In Psalm 9:17, which I don't have on the screen, it tells us that the nation that forgets God will be turned into hell. And we hear that quoted quite often. But what does that really mean? What does it mean to say the nation that forgets God? Now, all three of these passages tell us about the judgment that will come upon the nation when it forgets or when it rebels against God. There will be judgment. There will be consequences. The Bible calls the time of Jacob's trouble. And we understand that Jacob, referring to Israel and the covenant God made with Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob, and then that Israel then went into sin. The nation became troubled. The nation became punished. And we understand through the prophecies and in Kings and Chronicles that Israel was taken out of the land of Israel and they went into Europe. They're exiled from the promised land and became the nations of Europe. That, again, is a long, lengthy subject. I want to be also aware that everybody listening to this today on the internet is not going to agree with everything I say. I'm aware of that. There will be people who inherit in here who will turn to their, will see our ad in the Saturday's paper, will be curious, will go to the website. They'll see that there's going to be this message given about the recent Black Lives Matter rally in Harrison, and they're going to be listening to this message today. Some of those people will listen and agree, or be listened to, at least be tempted to agree. And there'll be other people who will not understand a single word I say and will consider what I'm saying be nothing but rambling nonsense. When I say our nation, I'm not talking about this land mass we call America, or I'm not talking about the government that now rules over us. When I say our nation, that there's trouble facing our nation, we're talking about our troubled nation, I'm talking about our people. Because our race is our nation. Our nation is our people. I know that's a lot to wrap around somebody's head who's never heard that before. I understand that. Our people are facing deep trouble. Through this ad that we have up on the screen, we placed in the weekend edition of the Harrison Times. I want to thank those who helped pay for that ad. We invited people to listen to this message this morning. And there will be some, like I said, who listen to it and thinks nothing of rambling nonsense. And there will be others who will listen and they'll get it. They'll get it. They'll understand. Let's take a moment and pray. Our Father, we ask you to open the ears of those who are truly humbled and truly want to see healing come to our nation, our troubled nation, our people. We ask that they will begin to reconnect their hearts to the hearts of our fathers and the hearts of our children. But we also ask that you'll blind the eyes of the wicked and plug the ears of the unrighteous, so they cannot see and cannot understand. Amen. There is a satanic war waging against the people of God. Now, here is a image. I don't have this on the screen. I'll probably have it on the screen when I do editing for later to go on the internet. But here's the article. Is your baby racist? And there's in here, there's an article basically telling you that, if I can find it real quick, I may not be able to find it so quick. Oh, if Black pride is good, they say, for African-American children, where does it leave white children? It's horrifying to imagine white kids being proud to be white. White people are under attack. They say, right here, Newsweek magazine, this went out 2000. I don't know how big the subscription was back in 2009 when this was published. But how many white people really understood what was being said? I don't know. But they tell us simply that for white kids to be proud of who they are would be horrifying. But black kids, non-white kids, it's a good and glorious thing. In this magazine here, this is published on the election of Barack Obama. I don't have this on the screen either. The End of White America. I've showed this to you all before. The End of White America. That was in 11 years ago. They're predicting the certain demise of white people in the country. And an interesting quote out of this magazine here said, Matt Ray, a sociologist at Temple University, who's a fan of Landers Hume, that's the individual, has observed that many of his white students are plagued by a racial identity crisis. This is a professor at Temple University. Many of his white students are plagued by a racial identity crisis. They don't care about socioeconomics. They care about culture. And to be white is to be culturally broke. The classic thing white students say when you ask them to talk about who they are is, I don't have a culture. They might be privileged. They might be loaded socioeconomically, but they feel bankrupt when it comes to culture. They feel disadvantaged. They feel marginalized. They don't have a culture that's cool. You know, you see the white kids marching some of the Black Lives Matter marches and so on. That's really the problem. They don't understand who they are. They don't appreciate the wonderful culture they do have, the wonderful heritage we do have. Now, I'm going to be very quickly. This on yesterday, just one day, and I'm sure these carry on for other days too. But one day, you know how you go on the internet and you go to, maybe you go to Google and they have various news feeds or Yahoo, various news feeds, and got all these news feeds. Here's where the news feeds that I found on Google and Yahoo yesterday. One was titled, "The Deep Roots of Louisville Rage Over the Police Killing." Police killing. Because the whole deal here was an attempt to marginalize the police departments and to create distrust of the police. And this was necessary to break down law and order and destroy Western culture. Over the police killing, not a person who killed someone, but the police killing. 16 years ago, one of America's most segregated cities almost became Ferguson before Ferguson, after police killed a young black woman. It erupted again. Again. For each of the past two nights, large protests have broken out on the streets of downtown Louisville, Kentucky, much as they have in cities across America, after Minneapolis police killed George Floyd, a black man, on Monday. In Louisville, the focus is another police killing. Just the police are out there murdering people. Same day, this article is on your news feed. How to protest safely. What to bring, what to do, and what to avoid. If you're planning on hitting the streets, here's what you need to know. The United States has a long, ugly history of police brutality. Specifically, and overwhelmingly, targeted towards black people. People are reading this stuff. And black kids are reading this stuff. And people, they're being brainwashed and ingrained with the idea that the police are something evil. We have to do away with the police. A note on engaging with the police. If you're white, you can use your privilege to your advantage. Your presence in the crowd can prevent more police brutality against people of color and black people in particular. You can even shield people of color with your body. This is all one day. One day. You know, people are going on the internet all the time. They're seeing these headlines and reading them. They don't read every one. I know that. Here's another one done yesterday. America's cities were designed to oppress. Did you know that? American cities. The cities were designed to oppress black people. That built-in oppression takes many forms. It's in the planning decisions that target non-white communities for highway projects and urban renewal schemes conceived to steer economic benefits away from existing residents. It's the design philosophy that turned neighborhoods into masses of defensible space that often criminalized blackness under the guise of safety. And it's in the proliferation of public space that often failed to let certain cultural communities congregate without fear of harassment. So the cities, when our cities are constructed, they're designed to harass black people. Architects and planners have an obligation to protect health, safety, and welfare through the space we design. As the George Floyd protests reveal, we failed. This moment is heartbreaking. Again, it is emotionally exhausting. Again, it is enraging to watch yet another black body plead not to be executed in public. Again, there's nothing more representative of the state of an abuse of power in America than the scene that inspired in Washington, D.C. on Monday night, after watching U.S. cities erupt for days with pain and grief in response to the police murder, because that's the police murder, just out murdering people, the police murder of George Floyd, President Donald Trump emerged from his White House bunker to forcibly remove clergy and tear gas Black Lives Matter protesters. That's what, did you know that? That's what Trump did. He came up, bunker, tear gas people. I didn't see the images, but it says it right here. This was all on yesterday's news feeds. Beyond the hashtag, how to take anti-racist action in your life, to point out and directly cite the fact that the system of U.S. policing, as we now know it, is rooted and deeply strangled, entangled in the need to control and surveil Black people. Another one, yesterday. Ahmaud Arbery killing is a reminder of the difference between non-racist and anti-racist. Here's one. How Latino people can fight anti-Black racism in our own culture. As the nation faces the latest in what represents a fundamental history of Black death and egregious violence by the police. The police. They're the new KKK, if you didn't know. Here's some headlines. Being Black while in nature, you're an endangered species. The article basically tells you that Black people who try to enjoy the parks and try to enjoy the state parks, city parks, the federal parks, Black people try to go into the parks are harassed because people think, why are Black people in the parks? So anyway, you're being harassed if you go to a park. Here's one, an 18th century Quaker to war who challenged slavery, meat eating, and racism. Then go back to the 18th century dwarf to find this. Why do women vote for Hitler? Long forgot essays hold some answers. U.S. black-white inequality, understanding racial injustice in America. These were on yesterday's news feeds. Covert racism and white privilege are perpetuated in grocery stores and restaurants. Did you know that? Covert racism and white privilege are perpetrated in grocery stores and racism every day. Did you know that? Every day. When you go to the grocery store, you're exercising white privilege. I guess. I don't know. Reckoning with white supremacy. Five fundamentals for white folks. And a Black protester kneels on the ground, her hands in the air, as a white police officer shoves her face first into the ground. So this is being people are being propagandized throughout the country. Blacks, minorities, and even white people, white kids, are being geared to hate the police nationwide. And so we've had these riots throughout the country. You've all seen them. There's nothing, not telling you haven't seen. What is the answer to that? Well, we're not going to have any police departments. Los Angeles wanted to defund the police. New York says we're going to defund the police. Washington, D.C. is going to cut off funding to the police. We're not going to hire, we're not going to have any police departments. Now, Los Angeles and New York and Washington, D.C. and other large cities like Detroit, if they do away with the police, what they're going to do, they're all going to be on the honor system. Isn't that going to be nice? I mean, wouldn't that be nice? Harlem and Watts and New York and Washington, D.C. and Baltimore and St. Louis, East St. Louis. We're not going to know police because it's just be on the honor system. Why is this hatred directed towards white people? Why is that happening? Ever since the death of George Floyd, we have seen nationwide protests. You've all seen them. I've seen them. And every one of those protests have been designed to create hatred for law enforcement. That's the purpose. To create hatred for law enforcement. Why? Because law and order is one of the most fundamental characteristics of a white society. That's the first thing white people do, is create law and order. And we have this attack upon law and order in America today, and throughout the world, of course. And I know there'll be people who argue with me and say I'm making this up, but my statement remains true. In every major city in America, is a testimony to this truth. Every major city in America was at one time a beautiful place to live. My own native city of Detroit is my own personal testimony to do that. Law and order. I've told the story before, but there'll be those who'll be listening who have not heard it. When I was a youngster, my dad sold insurance in Detroit. And a large part of his insurance route, it was called a debit route at the time, was in what at that time was called the colored part of town. And my dad go to the colored part of town and collect the insurance premiums, much like a paperboy used to pick up the newspaper payment for the home delivery. And those places in Detroit, those black neighborhoods, were safe places to go because there was law and order. My mom never asked my dad to quit his job. My mom never told my dad that it's too dangerous. You can't go to that colored community. Sometimes he would take me in the summertime when I wasn't in school, and I'd ride with him into the colored part of town. My mother never once said, "You better not take Tommy." Isn't that cute, Tommy? Yeah. "Better not take Tommy, and it's too dangerous. About to get another job." Those places were safe. They were safe communities. Black families were strong. But somewhere like 85% of black families were a nuclear family. Their dad was at home. Because they're mimicking white culture, white civilization, law and order. They even did what they conked their hair. And that's another long story where they straightened their hair. The barbers here probably know what I mean by that. You know, they used some type of stuff. They made their hair straight. L. Sharpton still conks his hair. If you don't see L. Sharpton, he still has long, wavy hair going back here. Conks his hair. He probably doesn't do it the way Malcolm X describes in his book, his autobiography. But Detroit was a safe place. It was a safe place to live. I could get on my bicycle and ride downtown Detroit. But today, Detroit is not safe. It's not just safe for white people. It's not even safe for black people. Many, many good elderly black people, young black people, just want to live a life and better themselves. It's not safe for them either. As white people left Detroit, and there's a name for that called white flight, and it happened in every major city in the country. As white people left Detroit, so did law and order. At least by the 1950s, at least by then, because I was raised in a home with people that were very politically astute, so I remember the conversations of the older folks back then. At least by the 1950s, 70 years ago, there were efforts being made to describe the police as brutal, unnecessary, in the black population, in the black areas, in the colored part of town. And this is the agitation promoted by the communists and their attempt to dismantle our culture, our nation. Here is a copy of Huey Newton's book. I've got the original right here. Huey Newton was a member, founder of the Black Panther Party. And in here he says, one of the things, what we want? We want, this was from 1969, I believe. I got this bunch of other stuff out of a communist bookstore in Tucson, Arizona. We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. That had been generated in the black communities way back in the early 70s, late 60s at least. Why? Because law and order is the most fundamental characteristic of our people. And they want an end to police brutality. Undermine law and order. Here's another booklet. All Power to the People. I think I brought that one too. Maybe I didn't. I didn't bring that one. All Power to the People. Here's one of the images they have in this book. Different names for police officers. That's the policeman waving a banner across the street. They're telling little black kids in the ghetto. That's a officer writing a speeding ticket to generate hatred for the police. In the book published by the Black Panther Party, circulated among the black community for 50, 60 years now, There's a cop approaching a picket line. They tell little black children 70 years ago. Still telling them today. A pig patrolling the black community. But it goes back even further. Here is a copy of a book. Here's right here. Published by the American Communist Workers' Party. They say, this was published in 1928. They say, the Ku Klux Klan, the American Legion, the police, and other organs of government terrorism are mobilizing everywhere. There's a hatred for the police. Just didn't start in Ferguson. It just didn't start with George Floyd. It's been going back generations. And they're geared up to destroy our nation, our culture. I want you to understand that the effort to desire and the desire to destroy the police is a concerted effort by international communists who want to destroy America. And the black community are just an easy cannon fodder. Emotionally, can be emotionally charged. But it's all part of the rebellion against our faith, our Christian republic. A common chant that we heard when we would hold rallies was, the cops and the Klan go hand in hand. Cops and the Klan go hand in hand. Cops and the Klan go hand in hand. The boys in blue are Nazis too. The boys in blue are Nazis too. The hatred for the police. After the Ferguson, Missouri riots, we saw the formation of Black Lives Matter. And we've seen their images on TV, and we've seen videos and seen the news clips of them chanting down the street, killing the police, and pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. And that was extreme hatred for the police. Extreme hatred for law and order. The foundation of a civilization. Make no mistake, Black Lives Matter groups have a hatred for the police and a hatred for law and order in general. The Black Lives Matter groups, along with their affiliates, Antifa, has created strife, fear, looting, death, and millions of dollars of damage across the nation over the past few weeks. Antifa and Black Lives Matter are not our friends. They're not the friends of America. They're not the friends of white people. They're not even the friends of black people, the good black people. They're not their friends either. And they certainly are not the good friends of the good, loving, caring people of Harrison. So, why did our mayor, the mayor Jerry Jackson, why was he so eager to jump in with that crowd of police haters? Why was he so eager to do it? Because when they held their little march, he stopped in front of City Hall, and Jerry Jackson came out, jumped out in front to grab a bullhorn to tell how much he supported Black Lives Matter. But then he did plead with them, don't create any violence, stay peaceful.
Black Lives Matter March, Harrison, Arkansas.
This is our mayor, Mr. Jerry Jackson, handing a hog in the megaphone front. He wants to say a few words.
Now Jerry Jackson, our illustrious mayor of Harrison, siding with, aligning himself up with Black Lives Matter and their affiliates, Antifa, and their hatred towards police.
And Black Lives Matter now facing some serious consequences for messages like this one.
Yeah!
Well, the Black Lives Matter is now being sued by a black Dallas police officer. Sergeant Demetric Penny claims Black Lives Matter and their supporters have incited a, quote, race war and violence against police. Well, five Dallas officers were killed during an ambush at the end of a Black Lives Matter protest.
Why do the people of Harrison, why did they elect this man to be their mayor? And I hope they'll remember that come next election day when he runs for re-election. I know the rally was peaceful. And you hear in the news, well, this was a peaceful rally, and there was a peaceful rally, and a peaceful rally, and they brag, even the conservatives brag, we enforce or we endorse their right to free speech as long as it remained peaceful. And they're all happy and giggly. This was a peaceful rally. Well, let me tell you something. The man who steals your identity is also peaceful. But he's trying to steal your identity. The person who cons an old woman out of her life savings is peaceful. The people that con an elderly couple off the repair of their roof is peaceful. There's lots of peaceful people committing horrible crimes in America. So for them to brag about it while they're peaceful doesn't make any difference. Their target is still the same. To dismantle and destroy Western culture, dismantle and destroy law enforcement, and to dismantle and destroy our lives and our families. And they say, well, the rally in Paris on Friday was peaceful. I'll tell you why it was peaceful. Because there only was 100 of them. If there was 500, or there was 1,000, it would not have been peaceful. It's because there's just a few of them. And how do I know that? Because we have seen it all across the news. The looting, the smashed windows, buildings on fire. That would have happened in Harrison if 1,000 or 1,500 showed up. But there were just a few, greatly outnumbered by law enforcement, greatly outnumbered by fellow patriots standing around the square with their weapons to defend their homes. So, of course, they were peaceful. So, citizens of Harrison who are listening to this, you may want to think about Jerry Jackson next time he runs for re-election. In fact, you may want to think about anybody seeking election in Harrison. And they should be asked, what is their position on Black Lives Matter? What is their position? Do they support the police? Do they support law and order? Or do they support Black Lives Matter? We've seen the clips before. We've seen in images. We know what Black Lives Matter is about. But we're told, well, they were peaceful. Here is a picture of, I hope. Now, she's probably not going to be happy when she finds out her picture is blasted up on the internet. But that is Danielle Scott. She's the organizer of the march in Harrison. Danielle Scott. Danielle Scott is from moved to Harrison 8 years ago. She's raised her two biracial children in Harrison. Isn't that nice? But she hates Harrison. She hates us. And she wants to change it. If she hates Harrison so much, why does she move here? And why did she move? Why did she not move to a city that would be more of her liking, a city that more diversified? Why didn't she move to a small town in Arkansas like Pine Bluff? Why didn't she move there? If she don't like the racism of Harrison, she couldn't move to Pine Bluff. Here, white people come, build a nice little safe white community of good, loving, caring, wonderful, welcoming people, and then they want to come there and they want to attack us, and then they want to change it. Why did Jeff Crockett move here if he hates Harrison so much? If he hates our image, why did he move here? Why did Lane Ragsdale move here if she hates Harrison, hates our image so much? Why didn't she move to Pine Bluff or East St. Louis or Star City or plenty of other small towns in America? She didn't have to move to a big town. They didn't like it here. Why did they move here? Some of the people in Harrison may want to think about that next time you see Danielle or Jeff or Lane in the streets. You might want to ask him, why didn't you move to Harrison? Why didn't you move to Pine Bluff? There are many hours of information I give to you from old books, magazines, articles, and documents, but of course, that will soon become laborious. But I don't want to end this without reminding each of you that God has not forsaken us. We as a nation have forgotten our Christian history, the history of this country. We have forgotten the sure foundation our nation was built upon. We have forgotten the ever-loving grace that has been upon our people for thousands of years. Our forefathers came to this vast North American continent and built a country that became the envy of the world. Our forefathers called it God's holy habitation. A land chosen by the finger of God. John O'Sullivan, a well-known newspaper columnist in the 1850s, said, In America, we are establishing the greatest temple ever built for the worship of the Almighty. I don't know why so many churches and pastors in Harrison look the other way, or for that matter throughout the country. I don't know why they look the other way. When they see all this hatred amassed against us, I don't know why. I don't know why pastors just look the other way. Our Christian faith has been usurped and twisted and has made preachers to be fearful and cowardly. Those who are listening to this on the internet who live here in Harrison, I hope each of you will pray that God will once again give courage to the preachers in Harrison, but also give courage to the preachers throughout the land. Throughout the nation. Those Black Lives Matter people, along with Mayor Jerry Jackson, and those that support their hatred, want to call you and want to call I haters and monsters and other nasty names. But those here listening to me on the internet from Harrison and Boone County today, I want you to know that you are not a hater and you are not a monster. You're not a nasty person. I know many people stood in the square in Harrison Thursday and Friday with your weapons to demonstrate that you would not let this bunch of cultural terrorists destroy our city. I know you were there for that purpose. And I know others patrolled the neighborhoods and kept watch on your businesses and homes. But I want to remind you that it really isn't your gun that they fear. Because we all know a gun in the hand of a coward is useless. So they don't fear the gun. They're not afraid of your gun. They are afraid of you and your commitment and your love for America. They know down deep in your heart, you are somebody who says to yourself, I do love America. I do love my country. I do love my family. I do love my culture. I do love my heritage. I do love my liberties. I do love my family. And they know because you love those things, that is what they fear. They don't fear just the idea that you have a gun, but they fear your commitment and your loyalty to God, race, and nation. Let's pray. Our Father, we ask for your blessings upon our people, blessings upon our nation. We are indeed a troubled nation and a troubled people. We pray that you will touch the hearts of people throughout this country. And let them know that the grace of Jesus Christ is in their lives. And they can turn to him. He'll give them the courage and the grace to stand faithful. In this we ask it all. In your name, amen.
Very good sermon, Pastor Rob. If you'd like to get more information regarding church service as well as our publication, The Torch, you can write to us at Christian Revival Center, P.O. Box 602, Harrison, Arkansas 72601, or email us at revival@southshore.com. And with that, if I can have Jonathan come up, and if everyone can please stand, and we're going to have one more song.
Everyone turn to page number 115 for the closing hymn today. This is Standing on the Promises, page 115.